This is an ABC podcast.
This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
How do you be a good parent? I know it's something that we all worry about at some time or other, but usually there's people that we can follow, people that are like us in our community, people that we can choose to model ourselves on. But if you're part of the disabled community, it's a little bit harder. A few years ago, if you were born with a disability or even acquired one, it's very likely that you are either not allowed or actively discouraged from even thinking about starting a family. Even today, it's horrible to think that people with a disability are actively discriminated against if they do want to have children. Because most of us don't live in their shoes, we don't know what's possible or, in fact, what they've had to put up with in their journey to become parents. Because as Eliza Hull is about to explain, the biggest disability inflicted on this brave cohort of parents is our lack of understanding of just how capable these parents can be.
20% of the Australian population have a disability, and more than 15% of the Australian population have at least one parent with a disability, and yet we're represented nowhere.
So where do we find examples of people with a disability smashing out the job of being a parent? It's sometimes hard to see disabled people just getting about normal life. And in this fabulous book that Eliza Hull has curated, we get a beautiful opportunity of finding out what it's really like to be a parent with a disability. Eliza, is it true to say that this book began with an ABC project?
Yeah, that's right. It actually, all began at ABC. I was the recipient of the Regional Storyteller Scholarship, and that is for a person that lives regionally and a person with disability. And it was my project idea to create the audio series We've Got This, which was featured on Radio National's Life Matters and also became articles that were featured on ABC Every Day. And now it's a book, and I had always wanted it to be a book, and luckily Black Ink, the publisher, were really keen to put these stories out into the world.
So why was it a priority for you to tell stories from the perspective of parents with a disability?
I have a physical disability, so my condition is called Charcot-Marie-Tooth. And I've had my disability since I was 5 years old. And the way that it manifests is I walk differently, I fall over regularly, I have muscle loss and sensation loss. And there's also a genetic component to my disability. When I was thinking about having a family, I was so excited and really ready to start a family and went to my neurologist at the time. And I was expecting him to give me some tips and some advice, but I was met with discrimination, him saying that he didn't think that I'd be able to manage, that I shouldn't be a parent, have I considered other options? And if I had have listened to his advice, I wouldn't have the two gorgeous children that I have. I also realised at that point, I felt very alone in my decision to parent as a person with disability. There's just nothing out there that represented parents with disability in an accurate and authentic way. There wasn't a book out there. I couldn't think of a movie, TV show that represented disabled parents thriving. And so that was when I was like, okay, I've really got to do something here, because 20% of the Australian population have a disability, and more than 15% of the Australian population have at least one parent with a disability, and yet we're represented nowhere. So I wanted to really just create a book that would have helped me in my decision to become a parent.
It's just an amazing book for stories of courage and, you know, almost resistance. It's like I'm so angry on behalf of some of the people that you have in the book, because the biggest obstacle to them is not the disability, it's other people's perception of them.
Yeah, you are right. So there's 25 stories in this collection, and they identify as either having a disability, as parents that are deaf, or parents with chronic illness. We also have autistic families. And the biggest thread within the whole book is that they have faced discrimination and, as you said, just these attitudes of what we can and can't do as people with disability. And so that was really the common thread that I noticed, is especially within the medical system. So, for instance, there's two parents that speak about they're both deaf. And when they gave birth to their child, they were just so excited that we're starting their family. And the person that came in, one of the nurses that did the hearing test for their child, they weren't provided an Auslan interpreter, so they couldn't really understand what was going on. There wasn't any accessibility for them. And then the nurse was just over the moon, excited, overjoyed, and decided to congratulate them because their child wasn't like them. Their child was hearing. That just can make you feel very hurt as a parent, that it shouldn't be something that's congratulated to say that, you know, your child is not like you. So they were very hurt. And there's other instances where two parents that were blind in the hospital, straight away a social worker was called because their ability to parent was questioned. And again, like when we step into these families, families are thriving, and they have very successful families where their kids are now at school. And so it's just, yeah, it's a stigma and these misconceptions about what parents with disability can do and can't do. And I think the biggest issue is for parents with intellectual disability, and there are parents within this book that identify as having an intellectual disability. And 60% of parents with intellectual disability have their children taken and taken into child protection. And often this is for no other reason but just the lack of education and lack of support. For any parent, it can be a very isolating experience when you have a child. And I mean, I remember when I brought my daughter home, it was, you know, first baby, and just looked at my partner and like, what do we do now that we're home? It's so daunting. And if you can imagine being a parent with intellectual disability, there are added complexities there. And so to not be given the appropriate supports, it's really a fault and a real like hole. And so what I think that what really needs to happen there is that further education and further support needs to be put in place for these parents to be the incredible parents that they can be. And so unfortunately, one parent within the book did lose the right to have their child because they only got their one visit from the maternal health nurse to their house. They didn't get any extra help or support. And in the end, they just couldn't manage. Whereas there are parents in the book that luckily had family support around them that really fought for them, and so they went to court to be able to keep their child and luckily won. The actual judge apologised that they even had to be there in the first place. He couldn't believe that child protection had pushed them that far to go into the court system because they were clearly able to parent, and now they've got an incredible young child that is off to school, and their family is just so beautiful. And so it really shows that if given the right supports and if given the education, parents with intellectual disability deserve the right to parent, and it doesn't serve the parent or the child for the child to be taken. Of course, there are times when child protection is definitely necessary, but that's the case for non-disabled parents as well. But yeah, ultimately, if possible and education can be provided, children really belong with their parents.
And for those of us with a gene-based disability, how do you navigate the medical response to wanting to have a baby?
Like for me, I have a 50% chance of passing on my disability. And I have to be honest, it's not something that I decided lightly. And I think that goes, when I speak about the social model of disability, the social model is that the world is disabling. And so it's not my disability, it's actually the world's barriers that are the things that make it really challenging. And so I didn't want that for my child. I've been stopped on the street and prayed for, I've been stared at, laughed at, there are buildings that I can't get into because I can't get upstairs. And so that is something that I didn't want for my child. But in the end, I, as somebody that's lived with my disability since I was 5 years old, I have lived very, you know, long lived experience. I decided that ultimately diversity is what makes this world beautiful. And I'm really proud to have a disability. It's changed my life for the better. I've been able to create this audio series and this book and change the attitudes in the world for the greater good. So ultimately, I chose to have children, and I'm so glad I did, because I have two wonderful children, and I don't think that disability should be screened out. Like, I think diversity and disability is what makes this world great, and I totally just think that it's part of this world, and diversity is such a great thing. There are examples within the book, like Deborah Kinahan. She is a person with dwarfism, and when she went in to speak to her doctor, he said, you know, if you had have come to me 3 weeks ago, we would have been able to do something about this. At that moment, she realised that he was telling her that her child also had dwarfism. And ultimately, he was saying that we should have gotten rid of that child. If they had have gotten rid of that child, Sarah wouldn't have been born. And Sarah is a bubbly young adult who plays sport, drives a car, lives a great life, wants to have her own children, plays sport, is an actor, was on TV, and is studying to be a veterinary scientist. So I think that actually it falls back onto these medical professionals to start to change and shift the attitudes of what it means to have a disability.
Yeah, it's really amazing, Eliza, because, you know, we're horrified at Adolf Hitler's final solution to have this perfect race. But when you throw away comments like, let's screen out against dwarfism, it's that exact sentiment of let's get the perfect series of humans. And even one of your mothers who had autism being told, you don't want another kid like the three you've already got, do you?
Yeah, it's just this constant belief that disability is a deficit and disability is a negative thing and that we should screen for it. And yeah, I think you're right. I think it's almost like creating this perfect race, which I just don't believe in or see value in.
I found it really interesting that all of the parents going through the process of having a baby, and it's the dads as well, is a sort of a realization, almost appreciating themselves a lot more, being prouder of what they could achieve.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it really, collecting all the stories, so some of them were completed by me interviewing the parents and then creating the stories together, and some of the parents wrote their own stories. And throughout, it really was a link that of almost like self-acceptance that came from having children. I think that because of lack of representation in our media of disability, especially as us, you know, when we were children growing up, we just didn't see ourselves represented on TV. And so you have internalized ableism around disability, that disability is a bad thing. And once you actually have children, A, you realize that, wow, my body is capable and I can, you know, look after a child and give birth to a child, and also be that you want to model self-acceptance and authenticity so that your children can also be who they are. You want to be that for your children. And so I think that really was, for a long time, I hid my disability and would always sit down so that people didn't see the way that I walked, because I was so scared of being judged or discriminated against. Whereas when I had my child, my first child, Isabel, it was really time for me to go, actually, this is time to be myself and to take off that heavy weight and be true, because I want her to see that in me so that she can be whoever she wants to be.
And that's not saying that it's easy either. You've got a beautiful chapter written by Jacinta Parsons from the ABC, and she talks about just being so on down days, being really debilitated in bed, and her daughter being really cranky with her that she's not being a normal mum to get up and play. So it's not, you know, it's not all just peachy keen once you have a baby either.
Definitely not. Yeah, Jacinta speaks about having a chronic illness where it is I guess, more of an invisible disability. And so her child didn't know what was going on and would say, "Why can't you get out of bed?" And Jacinta realised that she wasn't communicating to her child how much she was trying, how much she was seeking advice from medical professionals. And so she actually opened up and told her daughter that this is where I'm going, and I'm going to the hospital, and this is who I see, and these are the conversations I have. And the moment that she asked her daughter to step in into, I guess, her disability identity, was the moment that her daughter realised, okay, this is what's happening to mum, and this is what's happening to our family. And so growth and acceptance happened through that.
The other perception from outside disability is that, you know, by having a... inverted commas, normal child, if you're disabled, means that you end up with, you know, someone that can share that burden of the disability. You know, the kids will be able to help you. How is that also unhelpful?
Yeah, I think there's a real misconception, especially for certain parents. I know for parents that are blind, there's this idea that your parents, or that your children rather, are looking after you. Whereas it's really not the case. You know, there's an example where a child had a tantrum, you know, 2 minutes before, and suddenly you walk into a shop and the child gets congratulated and, you know, thank, you know, it's so great that you're looking after mum and dad. But it's just this misconception that children are looking after their parents. And I think that that falls into this idea that parents with disability are incapable to parent, which is, again, another misconception. I think that there are times when children do step up and take some of that caring load, but it generally comes at a choice for the child, and that is portrayed throughout the book. So the two parents that are deaf have two children that are hearing, and they actually, when they go to the fish and chip shop or for an order, their child will just say, please dad, can I interpret for you? I love it, please. So it's not like the child is taking on a burden. The child is bilingual, speaks Auslan and also speaks in English. And so the child really just wants to help. And there is another example in the book by a writer called Shakira Hussain, who has MS. And again, her daughter says to her mum, I don't want anyone else to look after you. I want to look after you. And the mother said, okay, you can take, you know, so if you want to, you can do things in the house, but you, at this point, this child was a teenager, you know, as long as you see yourself moving out and getting your own life, because I can do this on my own and I can get support services. So it was just that exchange and that promise. But in the end, I think by taking on any of those caring responsibilities, which generally, as I said, come by choice, we are creating children that are the future, and these children become people that are inclusive, open and kind ultimately, and go out into the world and see disability as something that ought to be celebrated and not something that or to be feared.
There's some tragic stories too. Micheline Lee, when she talks about falling out of her wheelchair and her son just not wanting to have anything to do with helping her back in again.
Yeah, I love Micheline's story so much. I mean, she's such an incredible writer. And the way that she expresses that shame and vulnerability is so beautiful. And she says that her son doesn't want to walk with her anymore into the school gate, and she is a wheelchair user, and then again he feels shame when she falls out of her wheelchair, and Micheline describes that she feels shame, and I really appreciate her vulnerability. But I think that all children get that feeling of like, oh, I don't really want to walk in with mum anymore. So I think that also might be because of disability, or maybe not.
Yeah, I'm sure we've all got that ahead of us.
Exactly.
I really think that your book needs to be read by the whole medical profession, really, to just get a concept of just, you know, how unhelpful some of the things that they say can be to people.
I totally agree. I think that's really the space that I want this book to reach, because it's generally where the discrimination happens, and it falls into this idea that parents aren't capable with disability. So I'm really grateful that medical professionals are reaching out and ordering this book, and I've been doing some launch events, and again, I'm seeing medical professionals come to the events, and they are stepping in and asking questions and are willing to learn. And I think it's just based on historical assumptions. So again, that's something that they have learnt over time. And the change is really happening, and shift is starting to happen, and attitudes are changing. So I really hope that this book adds to that change.
Even in my generation, I'm a bit ahead of you, Eliza, but no, a girl that was my age had hysterectomy when she's hit puberty because it was really difficult to manage periods. That was a pretty routine thing back then. Things have taken a big step forward.
Absolutely, yeah. Forced sterilisation of women and girls still happen today in Australia. And many countries are changing those laws. Unfortunately, Australia is behind. And I truly believe that we need to begin the conversation and realise that people with disabilities should have autonomy of their own bodies.
If you sort of here read this book about parents with disabilities, you'd go, that might be a bit of a downer, but it's actually a really uplifting book.
Totally agree. Like, there's some funny moments within the book, but ultimately it's just human stories. They're really interesting. Like, they answer questions like how do two deaf parents know that their child is crying in the night? How did two blind parents take their children into the park? What's that like? So those kind of curious questions that are just really intriguing and interesting. But ultimately, it's just human stories. It's parenting stories. And I think whilst teaching the reader, they also just are just interesting. And as I said, at times enlightening and funny.
Yeah, and gives you a guide to, you know, how to behave appropriately around people with disabilities. And we learn so much about, you know, how people want to be identified, but also the horrendous situation for the two, the mother and daughter, who both have dwarfism. Do not go and take a photo of them.
Yeah, the question that I get asked the most, I think, as a person with disability is, how do I talk to my kids about disability? And Deborah Kenahan, as you were speaking about, shows two examples of what parenting can look like. She was walking into a bank and a parent came up to her with their child, and they were strangers. And the child said, "Why is she so small?" And the mother said, "Because she hasn't eaten her vegetables. And if you don't eat your vegetables, you'll end up like her." And Deborah Kenahan is just such an incredible, powerful force, and just was like, "I eat my vegetables, excuse me," and just said, you know, that's terrible parenting. And then the other example, she was with her daughter Sarah, and they both have dwarfism, and a child came up to them and said to their mother, why is she so small?" And then said to the other, to Deborah's daughter, "Why are there so many of them?" Because both of them are short statured. And the parent said, "Well, we're all different. Well, some of us are tall and some of us are short. And that's what makes the world wonderful, you know, diversity." And then stepped in and said to Deborah, "Would you mind if we spoke to you about your disability?" And Deborah was more than happy to engage in the conversation. And as the conversation unraveled, the child noticed that Deborah had beautiful puppy dogs. And so after a couple of seconds, didn't mean anything that they were short, and the little boy just started engaging with the puppies. So I think that I believe if we tell our children to not ask questions and not be kind and curious, in a way, we're actually creating more stigma. So I actually think that we should step in and have conversations. But ultimately, it's not up to every single person with disability to educate your child. So I would say have representation in your home, picture books, movies, any kind of children's book that represents disability, and start the conversation at home and talk about the word disability and that it's not a bad word and that it's okay to have this, you know, have a disability, and it's what makes this world wonderful and we're all different. I think that that's where it starts. It starts in the home, and you'll find that your children will accept that and move on, and it won't become a stigma or something to be feared.
if my child said we met down the street and we were chatting and they said, oh, why is that lady walking funny? Because children do say what's like front of face. I mean, how do I adequately respond to that?
You could step in with your child and ask that person whether it's okay, whether we ask that question. Mm. And if that person meets you with a no, then you move on and then have that conversation with your child yourself, and just say that everybody walks differently. You know, there's some people that walk differently and there's some people that walk, you know, the way that you and I walk. And yeah, again, that disability is part of the population, that 20% of the population have a disability, and that diversity and difference is what makes this world wonderful. We are all different. And if that person does want to engage with your child, then yeah, we just ask the question of, do you mind if we ask why you walk like that? And my child is just being curious and kind, and I hope you don't mind that we're asking. That's appropriate.
Prepare to have your mind blown by Eliza Hull's book. It's called We've Got This, and it's not a dreary read by any stretch of the imagination. If you work in the health services, I think it should be compulsory reading. Although I know Eliza through her work at the ABC, I was so proud of what she's achieved with this book. It's full of stories about great parenting. And honestly, it's a great uplifting read for anyone who is a parent. On Baby Talk, we love meeting parents, especially the brand new ones. Last week, we met Gabrielle Nancaro, whose life was so profoundly changed by giving birth. She became a doula herself and now supports other women through that profound transition to motherhood.
So it's not about how that baby was born or what her hopes were going into it. It was that during the birth, she felt held and supported and seen and heard and not rushed. And they're the things that really help lessen any trauma. So yet hiring a doula, it doesn't make you immune to trauma, unfortunately, but we do our best to help you emerge from birth feeling positive about your story, happy, empowered, and if there is going to be another baby, without fear for your next birth.
And you can hear Gabrielle's podcast about her book, The Birth Space, and many others in our great collection of stories about parents on the Baby Talk website. It's easy to find. Just search Baby Talk, one word, and you can find past episodes on the ABC Listen app and on iTunes as well. I'm Penny Johnston. I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.